I'm Phil Golding, and this is 5 Steps to Freedom. This episode, entitled Identifying and Activating Your Power to Transform Your Life, is based in part on my 5-step process for healing your mind, self-awareness, and empowerment, and my self-help book, 5 Steps to Freedom, A Path to Inner Harmony and Personal Growth. To get an overview of my 5-step process, which is the basis of my work as a psychotherapist and self-awareness, meditation, mindfulness teacher, go to my podcast, The 5-Step Process for Healing, Wisdom and Empowerment, which I have produced for this purpose. So let's get started with a few important questions. What is the power behind our ability to transcend the mind and its confusions and suffering? What is that power that enables us to face our human self once we have been able to transcend it and get on with the process of healing and reprogramming our mind? What is the power that opens our heart and empowers our awareness to be the force of healing and awakening for the mind that enables us to perceive and align to our real potential? Why is this power still such a mystery, to the point where most people either don't believe it is real or are just too busy getting on with life that they don't give it much thought? This is the same power that the sages, gurus, and philosophers have been speaking of throughout the ages, through stories handed down from generation to generation, through written texts, ceremonies, and traditions, and a myriad of symbologies. A name you could give this ultimate power is unconditional love. It is also called oneness. My experience has shown me that unconditional love is the feeling of oneness. So how do we go about connecting to this oneness in a world that seems so divided? How do I feel this oneness while confined to this individual human body? Now, we all get that love is important, but when we start talking about unconditional love, that's when it starts getting difficult. The question quickly arises, is unconditional love even possible in this world? Is it even real? Such questions and skepticism are totally understandable. Who amongst us has truly experienced unconditional love, something that is not just fleeting, but real and dependable? Even religion struggles with this concept. So much of religion, of all persuasions, speaks about a punishing God and promotes division as a consequence. But there have been religious devotees throughout the ages, from all traditions, who have identified with a God of unconditional love and have been so inspired by this that they did their best to be a representative of this love, often to great effect. Even though the source of this religious unconditional love is not of this world, it seems we can be its representative. I had a taste of this as a 14-year-old, when I had a born-again experience as a Christian, motivated by a kind Christian mentor. The euphoria that I experienced was the result of the belief that God loved me unconditionally. Just this was enough to have a profound effect, even though I wasn't mature enough to know how to hang on to that connection, let alone how to live by it. I rediscovered that connection in a sustainable way later in my mid-20s, though not through religion. It would be easy to scoff at the temporary religious experience of a naive 14-year-old, but the temporary effect was profound nonetheless. So is there something to this? In our present time, there are actually many people having similar profound awakenings, not only from the various religious and spiritual wisdom paths, but from near-death experiences, and also from what is called psychedelic experiences, brought on by taking a psychotropic drug. I have studied both extensively and have experienced the latter. Uninformed skeptics try to claim that NDEs and psychedelic experiences are various forms of delusion, but empirical studies have disproved this assumption. One can be out of body after dying on an operating table, with the surgeons knowing full well that the person has died, and yet once revived or simply returned to the body, the patient describes in detail what was happening in the operating room after they had died. It has been shown that the psychotropic drug does not distort the mind, but opens it up to higher states of consciousness. This is why it is being studied and used as a therapeutic process for registered mental health professionals. These drugs are naturally occurring in nature and also within our own body's metabolic system. I have observed this when facilitating clients and students into similar states of expanded consciousness just through guided meditation. What is particularly useful and important about NDEs and psychedelic encounters is that they are direct, first-hand experiences of oneness, unconditional love. It is not someone expecting or demanding that you believe some religious doctrine. It is simply people talking about their personal experience and about how that experience changed them. Over the last 40 years or so, these experiences have been systematically recorded, collated, studied, and compared. This has revealed that there is a number of common elements in these experiences, as well as informing us of the nature of the mind and conscious awareness, and the relationship between these two dimensions of our human experience. So let's have a look at what has come to be called near-death experiences. Near-death experiences, or NDEs, could be more accurately termed life-after-death experiences. 40-50 years ago, it was rarely spoken about, and perhaps less common. For those I have heard speak about their experiences from years past, their main fear was not being believed, or not believing it themselves, despite the profound nature of the experience. This experience of coming face to face with an all-loving, all-encompassing consciousness, both in the form of an infinite universal light of pure love, and also personal contact with loving and compassionate spirit beings, often didn't match what they were told in religion, and certainly conflicted with modern science. So the experiences were often pushed to the back of the mind, along with any changes of perception and ability that came with the experience. Today, however, there are internet forums and Facebook groups that encourage such disclosure, along with empirical scientific studies confirming the phenomena. There are also the advances in medical science that enable us to revive people who would have normally stayed dead. Now reports amount to tens of thousands. These people were supposed to be dead, lights out, not conscious. Many dying under very controlled conditions in hospital, such as in a cardiac ward or on an operating table. Some being dead for extended periods of time, beyond what medical science claims is possible for revival, without permanent brain damage. Some died due to being at the last stage of an illness, such as cancer, and proceeded to miraculously heal once they inexplicably regained consciousness. Even though these NDE experiences may widely vary in depth and in the nature of the experience, as I have already mentioned, there are common important elements. Being embraced, lifted up into an infinite, universal, all-encompassing light that is experienced as infinite, universal, unconditional love is the most common reported experience, and if the experience goes deep enough, it is the most impactful, transformative experience. It is also commonly reported that life on the other side is felt as far more real than life in this world. Experiencing a life review is also common. This life review is often facilitated by compassionate spirit guides, where the person experiences events in their life, both positive and negative, from the direct perspective of the consciousness of all those involved in that event. Therefore, the NDE experiencer has a profoundly personal experience of how their behavior impacts others. It is important to note that they are held in a loving, compassionate, non-judging presence during this review. There is no hint of punishment, only the opportunity to learn. If there is judgment, the NDE experiencer reports that this comes only from their own mind towards themselves, and they are mentored by the spirit guides to forgive and accept themselves, but also to face up to and learn from the experience. So there is no punishment, only acceptance and learning through compassionate personal responsibility. This facing oneself and learning from our mistakes suggests a universal morality of wrong and right. Or to put it another way, what we do that creates division, disharmony, and suffering, including the ways we treat ourselves, versus what we do that creates harmony, healing, unity, and love. In other words, what is destructive compared to what is constructive? Having something to learn also suggests that we are here to evolve, not just to live, have children, compete for, and consume resources, and die. An extensive study of NDEs indicates that the variation of the experiences seems to be influenced by the individual's human consciousness or personality. In other words, the experiencer, once dead, does not immediately shed their earthly consciousness, even though they commonly report being in a far more expansive state of consciousness. These experiences indicate a greater spiritual potential that is experienced more fully during the NDE, but the spiritual consciousness is still blended to varying degrees with their present human life consciousness. The body may have died, but the human mind consciousness is still very evident. It is commonly reported that when the NDE experiencer returns to the body, they experience their more expansive spiritual consciousness being restricted and compressed within the physical human body consciousness and the density of the human world, making it hard to feel and experience that expansive feeling of oneness in a world of separate mortal physical bodies. So what happens after the person returns from their life after death experience? A very important common NDE experience is that the person is permanently and profoundly changed by that experience. One is awakened to a greater potential of their spiritual consciousness, and that their potential, their true nature, is unconditional love. That they didn't just visit this infinite universal light of love, they gain a deep personal experience and conviction that they literally are this infinite light of love, and that all beings are also this infinite love, and that we are all profoundly interconnected as one, as this light, this universal consciousness. The Sufi philosopher Rumi once said, "We are all drops in the infinite ocean of life, but the whole ocean is in every drop." It is understood that the feeling of unconditional love is the experience of or sensing this oneness. Having had the experience, they are then motivated to live their lives according to this greater knowing. The person becomes committed to being an aware representative of unconditional love to themselves and to those around them. They commonly become determined to face themselves, take responsibility for their thoughts and actions, along with healing old emotional wounds and raising their consciousness as a result. So let's have a look at psychedelic experiences. Psychedelic experiences have some important elements common with NDEs, none more important than the experience of being embraced in unconditional love, oneness, and the transformational effect this can have on the experiencer. One main difference, though, is the fact that the person has chosen to embark on this experience with some level of knowledge of the outcome, and that this experience can be voluntarily repeated. The reasons this experience is chosen can also differ. This difference in motivation can fall into two categories. 1. I choose this experience to escape from myself due to feeling empty or bored, etc. And the second common motivation. The other is being motivated to get into myself and access, explore, and activate my power of consciousness to heal my mind and/or expand my awareness. The nature of my motivation can profoundly influence my experience. To understand the transformational nature of these experiences, it is helpful to see the mind and awareness as two separate things, that the mind and awareness reside on two different dimensions, awareness on a higher dimension than the mind. The mind is our human consciousness that is identified with and attached to our body and consists of our memories and our conditioning and our instinctual drives. When you look into your mind, you are basically looking into your past. You are experiencing your human mind consciousness, identifying with your mortal, separate body, and your habitual and often irrational conditioning and memory triggers, all of which are frequently impacting your present moment emotional balance. We are trying to live this moment, but our mind is often acting from past conditioning and or pulled into the mental, emotional energy and imagery of old memories, leading to frequent confusion. As a result, our human consciousness is often afraid and vulnerable. It is innately vulnerable right from the start due to identifying with our human mortal body. Our human consciousness is also often reactive, combative, defensive, due to frequently reverting to fight or flight to protect its vulnerabilities, not realizing that most of these vulnerabilities are caused by our own unconscious and habitual self-defeating, self-attacking thinking. Without awareness taking the lead, the mind remains like a vulnerable, reactive child who is unable to fully mature, hence all the conflict, greed, and therefore suffering in the world. That does not mean that our human mind is bad or inherently evil, as some religious doctrines put it. Our human mind consciousness on its own is simply limited in its capacity to be aware and to be able to grasp the big picture, to be able to look objectively into itself and beyond its fears and insecurities. This is the dilemma of being human, of being like children still in the process of growing up. For so many of us humans, however, the capacity to keep growing, to keep maturing our consciousness becomes seriously limited, stalled, or even frozen. This is because instead of facing, owning, and processing our fears and insecurities, we avoid them, actively run away from them, and even blame them on others, as though we are still powerless children. When we do this, it is like we are letting the children take charge of the house. Needless to say, the house is going to fall into disarray. Learning to effectively and compassionately face ourselves and take full responsibility to care for and parent our own minds is the great human challenge. Nevertheless, facing oneself is the way humans evolve themselves. If everyone focused on making this compassionate self-responsibility their most important goal in life, humanity would transform itself in just 10 years, and I say that in all seriousness. Most people would have discovered by then how to become the genuine solution to their problems, rather than being the blind creator of their problems. It is so difficult to do because compassionately facing oneself as the totally responsible parent of the mind tends to be the opposite to how our egos have learned to operate. Awareness, in effect, is meant to be the informed and skillful parent of the mind, rather than the blind servant of the mind, and therefore reduced to being mere ego. Awareness, in its real potential, exists on a higher dimension to the body, mind, ego. True awareness is centered in oneness, which is why we have the potential to perceive and experience oneness. Pure awareness is the expanded consciousness that we experience ourselves to be whilst immersed in a life-after-death experience or a deep psychedelic experience. It is on this level of consciousness that we feel our interconnectedness with all there is. It is through our awakened awareness that we can feel and express the qualities of unconditional love, such as empathy, compassion, and loving kindness. It is from awareness that we gain true clarity and wisdom, which is the capacity to act from love under all circumstances, with a knowing that is unshakable and ultimately empowered. It is pure awareness that has the capacity to transcend the mind, hence its location in a higher dimension, and from there effectively observe the mind from a genuinely higher, detached perspective of true objectivity. So a truly awakened awareness is like the wise and loving parent, home and sanctuary of the mind, which, compared to awareness, is always like the growing child. If you go deep enough into a psychedelic experience, you break into realms of consciousness that are dedicated to facing, healing, and evolving the confused and vulnerable human consciousness. This stage of the process is on your way to experiencing oneness, and could be seen as the gatekeeper to your greater potential. It is akin to the life review of the life after death experience, but somewhat less controlled. This is where a psychedelic experience can be challenging, particularly if you are in the mindset of trying to escape from yourself. In this realm, you come face to face with yourself, face to face with your fears and insecurities, with your ego defenses and denials stripped away. You have no choice. This realm is all about the actual vibrational frequency of your state of mind. This experience can be hard and even shocking if you are in the process of trying to avoid yourself, because the root of self-avoidance is self-rejection, and this self-rejection will also be reflected back to you like a mirror, compounding fears and vulnerabilities that you are running away from. People call this a bad trip, but the negativity is all self-created. You are looking into the mirror of your own self-rejection. Being in a state of judging others will have a similar negative effect. In contrast, if you want to face yourself with the motivation to heal and evolve, then that is an act of self-love, and this realm will reflect that particular frequency. You will find that you are facing yourself with your heart more open and literally experience the light of love embracing your vulnerable human self unconditionally to the degree that your heart is open. You will have an experience of oneness that required you to do nothing but let go of judging yourself and others, which awakens you to the fact that you are already worthy of unconditional love unconditionally. Letting go of judgment doesn't make you worthy like there is some God that you have to please. You come to realize that this light of universal love, oneness, life, is always there for you unconditionally. It is your very nature. It is your own judgments that close the door, or to put it another way, that lower your vibration. It is our judgmentalism that reinforces the illusion that we are all separate. Through these transformational experiences, we come to realize that we choose consciously or unconsciously, to suffer in this world. In the same way, we can choose to heal and awaken. The power to do so is there for us all to tap into whenever we choose. Our own will in this human world has ultimate power over our lives. There is actually no power outside ourselves. But again, this is the opposite to how our egos tend to perceive ourselves in the world. This brings us to the two foundational steps of the five-step process. 1. Total acceptance. And 2. Total personal responsibility, which are the foundational steps of any effective path. This is the physics of consciousness. If you are making a sincere effort to face yourself with self-acceptance, accepting responsibility to care for your mind, like a loving and responsible parent takes responsibility for their child, and therefore their child's future, your ability to observe yourself from the perspective and power of unconditional love will begin to awaken. The life after death experience and the psychedelic experience is simply allowing you to experience your own potential for healing and awakening by aligning you to these same principles or physics of consciousness. Acceptance and personal responsibility. There is, however, a mistake that many make after having the experience of being embraced in this all-encompassing oneness, unconditional universal love. It does not matter if the oneness experience is gained via a religious or other form of spiritual practice or an NDE or psychedelic experience. The mistake is to think that this oneness is something that is beyond us, that we have to keep chasing this light through repeated appeals to a God above or through repeated psychedelic experiences, for example. The fact that you see this light as something outside yourself actually keeps you thinking and therefore feeling separate from it. You may have an initial awakening that can help you break through depression and/or anxiety, but you will struggle to keep growing past that initial experience and may even start to slip back due to not having your expectations of enlightenment or being saved met. You may start losing faith, in other words. This is why the various higher wisdom paths teach us that we are that power of love, that this universal love, this oneness, is the true nature of ourself. However, our everyday life experiences make perceiving and experiencing this ultimate personal potential difficult. Being in this physical world, in physical bodies, gives us the impression right from birth that we are all separate individuals that can only get love and fulfillment from things outside ourselves, and that we are even in competition for those things. We are kept busy chasing things in the world around us, and it becomes such a habit that we do this even with oneness, not fully comprehending the very nature of oneness means nothing can be outside it. For our physical body-mind personality, our humanness, this feeling and perception of separateness and resultant vulnerability is very hard to see beyond. But for awareness, a higher potential that we all have, oneness, is its natural state. The challenge is to awaken this potential of awareness from the confines of the limited human mind. judging ourselves and others as unworthy of love is what keeps us stuck, keeps us down, even though we may delude ourselves into thinking we are powerful. We judge because others don't meet our expectations. In other words, we get angry and hate others because they don't validate our worthiness in some way. We judge ourselves because we don't see ourselves living up to some internalized standard that we have become so conditioned to impose on ourselves. We are doing this judging in obvious ways, but also in very subtle ways that we're not even aware of. But nonetheless, it all causes some form of suffering. We become attached to other people, places and things, even our own self-image, when it does consistently validate our worthiness of love. But then there is the constant underlying anxiety of that love being taken away. This is what Buddha described as aversion and attachment, and pointed to this ongoing mindset as the cause of suffering. This mindset keeps us believing that we are separate, vulnerable, and powerless. We regard ourselves as perpetually empty in some way, and in need of filling up, but we are unable to always control the source of our fulfillment. We try to beg, manipulate, dominate, and cheat our way to fullness, and create more problems and suffering along the way. This is why the experience of oneness can be so profound and life-changing. It is the revelation that there is a permanent source of unconditional love that we can attach ourselves to. We worship the God of our understanding. We keep chasing that next spiritual peak experience, or the next psychedelic bliss, or feel lost and empty for coming back to this world after a blissful life after death experience. So how do we realize our potential and become this light, this oneness? The key is our awareness, and being able to activate our awareness so that we can experience our potential of oneness on an ongoing basis. This is where the foundational steps of the self-awareness process, acceptance and responsibility, become so important. When we set a determined commitment to compassionately accept ourselves unconditionally, while also accepting full responsibility for all that we think, therefore feel, say and do, it is ourself as awareness in the ongoing present moment who is setting that commitment. We are turning towards our mind as awareness, representing our potential of oneness, unconditional love, with our commitment to accept ourselves unconditionally. But this is not about self-indulgence. This is about self-mastery. So by accepting full responsibility for all that we think, therefore feel, say and do, we are placing ourselves on a path to learning how to master our mind. Unconditional acceptance and full personal responsibility is the opposite of self-rejection and self-judgment and the resultant fear and insecurities, aversions and attachments, the powerlessness, the conflict, and believing we are a victim. As awareness, we are committed to be our potential as best we can each day. We can do this because as awareness, flexible and adaptable in the present moment, we can get on with building whole new sets of programs that feel right, and that are based on the physics of consciousness that have been proven throughout the ages to create healing, awakening, and self-mastery. We are building an all-powerful perspective of clarity and compassion from where to observe our mind from. Where we can observe and feel how our mind is causing its own suffering, without ourself as awareness being so pulled into and blinded by the mind's confusion and suffering. Total personal responsibility is not about having to get it right, as our short-sighted and limited ego may think, causing it to recoil from the idea. Thinking we have to get it right and be a failure if we don't is a sign of the toxic internalized standards that we have been conditioned to impose on ourselves. Unconditional acceptance means we are going to accept the outcome of every attempt to accept ourselves and be in command of ourselves without judging ourselves or others. And personal responsibility means we are going to do our best to learn from each experience. We are not going to be able to do this perfectly, far from it at first, but we are attempting to be our real potential. And if we keep stepping up, no matter what the circumstances and conditions, no matter how many times our confused fight-or-flight mind beats us back, we will keep making headway. It is like learning a new sport, a sport that you have good potential to excel in. If you keep showing up, and practicing and learning from those who have mastered the game, you will also become the master. It is inevitable. When we are just chasing the light, thinking that it is something outside us, we remain on the sidelines, watching the game, instead of being in the game and learning how to win. In this game, though, everybody wins. Instead of putting these essential principles of acceptance and responsibility at the center of our life and live them ongoing, we tend to grasp at the solution, expecting something magical to happen. Because we are trying to escape from our suffering, instead of turning to face it with our hearts open, with a resolute faith in our potential and determination to never give up. When it comes to our awareness, or to put it more powerfully, when it comes to you as awareness, you are unlimited. You are oneness. You will never run out of awareness, no matter how fleeting and weak it may feel at first. Every time you get pulled down and lose your way, you bring yourself back to your learning, your meditations, your journaling, your reaching out to those who are practicing the way to an experienced mentor and learn from the experience and therefore strengthen and deepen your center of conscious awareness ongoing. Through your ongoing self-awareness practice, your Dharma, as it is called in the Eastern cultures, you keep filling up your tank with your own power of unconditional love and wisdom, which is the result of being oneness. In contrast, your mind's conditioning is a limited construct, held in place because you, as awareness, have not been awake. You have, due to being conditioned throughout your growing years, been reinforcing this conditioning by thinking you are that conditioning. Once you take a different position than the mind, you are in the position to reinforce a different, more constructive mindset, preferably one that works to create love, peace, and harmony. Even though, as awareness, we are still blended with the mind, we are nevertheless, slowly but surely, pulling ourselves free to where we can literally increasingly experience ourselves being awareness, observing our reacting mind, while remaining detached and centered. We are able to feel and experience the two different dimensions of ourself. At the same time, we are identifying the old self-defeating mindsets, conditioning programs, as they react in the moment, without identifying with them. So we can identify the old self-defeating programs, but we're no longer identifying with them as awareness. By not reacting with our reactive mind, we start depriving those old mindsets of the reinforcement they need to keep going. Of course, this is hard to do at first. In the moment, it'll probably get the better of us. We react, get pulled down into it. But because that observing self is there, getting stronger, we're going to pick it up quicker. And when we do, we can sit down, revisit the situation and process it, and therefore learn and strengthen our awareness. Through our processing, ongoing, we are reinforcing new constructive programs that are going to give us the life that we want. This is the basis of the practice of mindfulness. You are learning to fill your mind with awareness. This is your Dharma. Now, it is important to note that the mind is going to resist you by trying to hang on to its old programming. This does not mean that you are stupid or defective. Your mind is actually only trying to protect you. Your mind, on this more unconscious, primal level, can't tell the difference between a program that enables you to walk, talk, and drive a car, and the program that keeps calling you a failure whenever you don't get it right. These are all behaviors that have simply been repeatedly over time reinforced in your mind and have been subsequently imprinted, recorded into your brain's synaptic pathways. It would be problematic to suddenly forget how to talk or how to walk. The mind, however, is designed to be reprogrammed. For example, we can learn a new language or a new sport, but this requires dedication and repetition. As awareness, we are the parent, the manager of the mind. As awareness, we manage our life in the present moment, working from short-term memory, which is flexible and adaptable, unlike our conditioned mind, which is not flexible due to being bound up in habit. The mind is a recording mechanism. The mind works with long-term memory. This is the role it is meant to play. The mind is meant to support awareness with programming that matches our potential, taking care of routine tasks such as walking, talking, and managing things that are predictable, leaving awareness to manage anything more complex, new, or unexpected in the moment. As awareness, you are the captain of your ship. You are in the driver's seat. As awareness, we must keep being this new way for our mind, like a loving, patient, and totally committed parent who is dedicated to being present with and mentoring a troubled child. The mind has no choice but to take on the new programming, so long as you keep persisting. When you are at school, they are teaching you as awareness, the present moment self. It is then your job to teach that information to your mind through various forms of study and hands-on experience. Therefore, learning self-mastery is your Dharma, which is your practice of the physics of conscious awareness. As awareness, you must become the new way by staying aware of the new way and reinforcing that new way to yourself as you try to live the new way on a daily basis. So life after death and deeper psychedelic experiences show us the profound importance of unconditional self-acceptance and of accepting others as a way to open our hearts and therefore our awareness. Because you can't be aware without first opening your heart. These experiences also demonstrate the essential importance of total personal responsibility, to be able to face yourself, facilitated by the opening of your heart through the power of acceptance, and begin the journey of getting to know yourself as a human being, worthy of love, for no other reason than you exist. These two essential laws of consciousness pave the way for your journey of becoming a loving, compassionate, and wise parent who is always open to learning and growing, and compassionate and wise parent to your own vulnerable human self, as well as the liberator of your natural potential, not just as a human being, but as a being of a higher conscious awareness that can represent to yourself and to the world the infinite power of oneness, the power that opens hearts, the power that heals emotional wounds and mental confusion, the power that heals division and conflict amongst peoples and thus brings people together, just as we are learning to be one with ourselves. So that concludes this episode. To learn more about the process of healing and awakening, please get into my other podcasts, such as The 5-Step Process for Healing the Mind, Self-Awareness and Empowerment, and also Overcome Negative Self-Talk, as well as The Power of Meditation and The Power of Mindfulness. And also my guided meditations. And there is also my book, 5 Steps to Freedom, The Power to Inner Harmony and Personal Growth. Be your own forever loving and compassionate parent, and love will always warm your heart.